And Dr.
You see, the
McDougall,
reason I call it a starch-based diet, and the reason I took the bold step of naming my last book, The Starch Solution. Now, my editor said, "You're cutting off your nose to spite your face." Well, why would you do that? Call it starch because it's so crucial. You see, if you identify a diet as vegan, okay, what is that? That could be Cokes and potato chips. That's vegan.
right.
How about a whole food plant-based diet? Well, that could be celery, asparagus, broccoli, cauliflower. That's all wheat. That's a whole food plant-based. It doesn't define enough as to what people need to do to take action. And that's why I push the word starch as hard as I can, because you can't survive, without some difficulty living on kale and broccoli.
So, how does the McDougall program specifically tailor its approach to patients with diabetes, and what results have you seen?
Well, we take care of a lot of diabetics. First of all, diabetes is a spectrum of disease. It goes from type 1, where they produce no insulin, pancreas is injured, dead, to type 2, where they produce sometimes twice as much insulin as somebody who's in normal health, and they have insulin resistance. So I treat this spectrum a little differently. Type 1 always has to have insulin. They need a healthy diet because they're at very high risk of blindness, kidney failure, et cetera. So it's really crucial a type 1 diabetic follows a starch-based diet, but they have to have insulin. A type 2 diabetic, just by definition, is 100% curable by losing weight. By losing weight by any means. The Atkins diet, Wegovy, the GLP-1s, I can lock you up in a prison. I can wire your teeth together. Any way that I can cause you to lose the weight, you're going to get rid of insulin resistance and your type 2 diabetes will go away. It's just that the diet we teach is a diet that you can stick with and get so many other benefits. So that's why we teach that diet for type 2. Now, in between, there's a spectrum. I call it type 1.5 diabetes. In this case, they don't have to have insulin to stay alive, but they develop some complications. They lose too much weight because they have a relative deficiency in insulin or a relative excess in insulin resistance. So they have enough insulin to stay out of the hospital, not die, but they don't have enough insulin to keep the fat in the fat cells. So they lose way too much weight. They end up urinating a lot because of the sugar in their urinary system. So the excessive urination, excessive thirst. And of course, there's always the mother-in-law who worries about your numbers, and you need to treat that too. So what I do is I give them a little bit of insulin, the type 1.5. Now, for all of my patients, type 1 and type 1.5, I try and give a long-acting insulin called Lantus. And I can usually get by with one, at most two shots a day. I don't recommend insulin pumps. I don't recommend multi-day therapy. You can get by with a shot or two, even if you're a type 1 diabetic, on long-acting insulin. So, and if I didn't mention enough, I want to say over and over again, the food. They've got to eat right because, controlling blood sugar with insulin is of minor importance. I mean, it can be major importance, but, it's if you want to get healthy, you've got to deal with the underlying sickness. Fix the food.
And what causes high blood sugar? Is it simply sugar? Is it fat? And to the extent that
No.
it is fats, do olives, avocados, raw nuts, and seeds create high blood sugar?
Well,
It's fat.
I don't know that I can answer that easily, but I do want to say sugar makes insulin work better. Fat paralyzes insulin, even vegetable oils, and makes it work worse. So, it's just too general a question you ask for me to answer with how do I, treat this
Well, how about this?
type of thing.
How does someone become insulin resistant? Is that because they ate too much
Oh.
sugar, or is that because they ate too much fat?
Okay, this is the way,
Yeah.
as I understand it, it works. You're getting ready for the fall, all right? It's summertime, getting ready for the fall and winter. Body says, hey, there won't be any food available for the next 6 months. You better store up. And so the body stores up maybe 20, 30, 40 pounds. And then what happens, and it does it because of the insulin, then what happens is the body says, hey, I got to survive. You're gaining way too much weight. And pretty soon you can't get away from the saber-toothed tiger. Pretty soon you won't be able to get in the cave entrance. You're risking your life. So you develop insulin resistance, which means that the insulin works less effectively. And at the cellular level, there's actually changes in the receptors. It is a survival mechanism. It's not a disease. It's an adaptation that takes place to survive. And that's why when you lose the excess weight, it goes away. Now, type 1 diabetes is caused, well, it can be caused by a virus, but most of it is caused, I believe, by dairy protein. And that was published in 1992 in the New England Journal of Medicine, a study where they found on the beta casein part of the dairy protein, they found a section of 17 amino acids, which exactly matched the 17 amino acids that were on the insulin producing cells of the pancreas. So the body recognized the calomel protein as foreign. So it made antibodies to this foreign protein. In the process of looking for the milk protein, it discovers the same segment of amino acids on the pancreatic cells that produce insulin, and it destroys them. It takes somewhere between 3 and 6 years. And it happens in adults just as well as children. We just used to call it childhood diabetes. So that's how you get it, eating dairy and being too fat. Type 1 dairy, too fat dairy, and just too fat.
And why do some people...
It's easy to fix.
Yeah, why are some people susceptible to being affected by milk in that way, and the general population is not?
Well, they're called autoimmune diseases. The body's set up so that it will kill invading stuff like viruses and bacteria. All right. So when foreign stuff like a virus or a bacteria enters into your bloodstream, the body makes antibodies to attach to these microbes to keep you alive. Well, when you eat dairy, what happens in some people is the gut is leaky and the dairy protein passes intact into the bloodstream. And the body sees these 17 amino acids on the dairy, and it recognizes the whole dairy thing as foreign. But it sees the two familiar sets of 17 amino acids. And in the process of attacking this foreign substance, cow is not supposed to be in your blood. In the process of looking for the cow protein, it attacks your pancreas. We know this. And that's where, you know, all kinds of autoimmune diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, thyroiditis, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, vitiligo. I mean, good grief, I could just name 50 diseases for you. They're all caused by the same similar mechanism. Animal protein getting into the bloodstream where it's not supposed to be. The body says, hey, this is foreign. It attacks that foreign protein, but you find similar proteins on the body tissues. It's called, write it down. You got your pencils ready. It's called molecular mimicry. It's where the body attacks yourself. Molecular, you know, molecule level. Mimicry, like copy, right? Okay, look it up. Molecular mimicry, the body, when it's looking for a virus, a bacteria, or a cow or a pig or a fish or whatever, it gets confused and attacks you. It doesn't do that with plants. Why? Because we're not plants. Why does it do it with animal foods? Well, you know what the follow-up is. You see, we have similar proteins to other animals. You know, the difference in our makeup is tiny, tiny. Whereas a plant, you know, not at all familiar. So if plant proteins get through this gut wall, through a leaky gut, and float around the bloodstream, body doesn't care. It's not an invading foreign substance.